and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the reinstatement of the Miraville Town Court. Governor Eric Holcomb signed into law legislation giving businesses and institutions liability protections for most COVID-19 lawsuits. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch about a new campaign called Hoosiers by Choice, featuring people who moved to Indiana from other places and explaining why they have chosen to make the Hoosier State their permanent home. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Council has taken several steps to comply with a preliminary injunction regarding the town court, including reinstating the full operations of the court and paying its employees at their most recent wages. The town council voted in December 2019 to abolish the town court as of December 31st, 2020, saying it was losing money. Trista Hudson, an associate with financial advisors, Center & Co., said there were no line items in the salary ordinance for the assistance to the judge since the town thought the court would be closed. She goes on to say all court employees, including a part-time bailiff, need to be included. Hudson said all full-time court employees are also entitled to receive a $2,000 bonus that other full-time town employees received. The council also approved a transfer of funds into the court's budget to pay a bill of $8,332 for attorney fees. The Post Tribune reports, on the same day that it was to cease operation, Miraville Town Court Judge Eugene Velasco Jr. was chosen to fill the seat of former town judge Gina Jones during a caucus of the Miraville and Ross Township Precinct Organization. Jones had been appointed to Lake Superior Court by Governor Eric Holcomb. In granting the preliminary injunction late last month, Lake Superior Court Judge Bruce D. Parent ruled that the town council also needs to discontinue any action to shut down the town court until the matter could be heard. The town council must also reinstate the town court's online payment portal for the payments of fines and court costs, hire a certified public accountant to conduct a complete audit of the court's cash bond account, and make arrangements for the ultimate funding of the cash bond account as soon as possible. The town court, in turn, needs to begin winding down its operations and transfer more lengthy cases to Lake Superior Court. It also cannot accept any new cases. The town attorney said the court will continue to operate as it did until both sides can get a court date for a permanent order. Since Judge Parent issued the preliminary injunction, the two parties held a teleconference on February 10th with another meeting scheduled for March 3rd. In his findings of fact, Judge Parent pointed out that a former court employee had embezzled an unknown amount of money posted as cash bonds for certain pending criminal cases, with the amount possibly ranging from $175,000 to $425,000. Parent stated neither the current nor former town council know how much was taken and chose not to hire a certified public accountant to determine the actual amount. He also stated that only $50,000 has been repaid to the court, all coming from an insurance payout related to the theft. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Lake County is demanding payment of more than $30,000 from the Wisconsin Transportation Company it claims is responsible for the December 14th escape of an alleged murderer from a vehicle in the drive-thru of a McDonald's restaurant in Gary. The Times reports, on Wednesday, the Lake County Commissioners unanimously agreed to send a letter to Ready Transports seeking reimbursement for expenses incurred during the two-week manhunt and recapture of Leon Taylor, as well as repayment of the company's original charge to transport Taylor to Lake County from Texas. Commissioner Mike Repay writes in the letter, "There is very little doubt, based on visual evidence and the inconsistent statements of the transport officer, that Ready Transports and its employees were grossly negligent in transporting Taylor to Lake County." A spokesperson for Ready Transports did not immediately respond to a request for comments on the county's repayment demand.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb signed into law Thursday legislation giving businesses and institutions liability protections for most COVID-19 lawsuits. Senate Bill 1 requires an individual wanting to file suit to show evidence of gross negligence or willful or wanton misconduct. Holcomb said in a news release that the legislation will prevent, quote, frivolous lawsuits and help in the state's recovery from the pandemic. He said he believes most Hoosier businesses and organizations have been doing the best they can to protect their employees as well as customers. The bill did raise concerns by some that it will give too much protection to long-term care providers and prevent families from suing nursing homes for the treatment of their loved ones during the pandemic. The law will be retroactive, effective the beginning of March of last year and continuing through 2024.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana announced Wednesday it will soon open up a new emergency rental assistance program for Hoosiers in need. The program is made possible through nearly $450 million sent to the state via the latest COVID-19 relief package. Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority Director Jacob Seip says the new COVID rental assistance is different from the other ones that have come before it.
The eligible households can receive up to 12 months of rental assistance and utility home energy assistance. This includes a combination of past due rent and future months' rent.
Eligible households are ones in which at least one person qualifies for unemployment or had an income loss during the pandemic. Eligibility could also include those who've incurred significant costs or experienced a financial hardship over the last year. The household income must also be no more than 80% of the area median income for a family of four, that's about $58,000. SIPE says the state is waiting on necessary federal guidance to open the program. He encourages people to sign up for updates at IndianaHousingNow.org.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Indiana Senate thoroughly rejected legislation Monday that would have tied the hands of local governments when managing their public safety budgets. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brenda Smith reports the bill was a reaction to the Defund the Police movement.
Republican Senator Mike Bohachek's bill would have prevented local governments from reducing public safety budgets any more than the overall revenue loss they expect. Bohachek says it also would have blocked locals from shifting more than 5% of their public safety budget to other departments during the fiscal year.
This bill is not an anti-Black Lives Matter bill. This bill is a way to put some semblance of consistency into our local governments for our constituents.
But several senators said the bill unnecessarily tied the hands of local leaders. Republican Senator Liz Brown served on the Fort Wayne City Council.
I don't think we should be putting this type of restriction currently on our local government budgets.
Only 9 senators voted in favor of the bill, 37 voted against it. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana's governor and election commission would be blocked from ever again changing how and when an election is conducted under a bill passed by a Senate committee Monday. The measure is a reaction to the 2020 Indiana primary election conducted during the COVID-19 pandemic. Governor Eric Holcomb and the State Election Commission pushed back that primary from May to June and expanded vote by mail to anyone who wanted it. State Election Co-Counsel Matthew Colchever notes that was done with broad support.
A bipartisan commission appointed by the governor had buy-in from 2 of the major political parties, felt was needed to protect voters.
Proposed legislation would bar that from happening again. Instead, only the legislature could make such changes. Indiana Attorney General's Office Legislative Director Jared Bond says it's about preserving the General Assembly's authority.
The United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, is very clear that state legislatures are to provide the time, place, and manner of holding elections.
The bill now heads to the full Senate.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana doctors would be forced to tell patients their medication-induced abortions can be reversed under legislation approved by a House committee Monday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the broader scientific community says that claim is unproven and unethical.
Medication-induced abortions require 2 pills taken at different times. Proposed legislation would require doctors to tell patients their abortions can be reversed if they don't take the second pill and take a different medication. Dr. Caitlin Bernard is an OBGYN. She says if the state requires her to tell patients about abortion reversal treatment, it will be forcing her to commit malpractice. She calls it an experimental treatment that has been soundly disproven.
Not only that it is not effective, but in fact that it has dangerous and potentially deadly complications.
But OBGYN Dr. Christina Francis claims otherwise. She calls abortion reversal groundbreaking.
It would just ensure that those who regret their decision would have a ray of hope of being able to save their child. It would be dishonest and cruel not to make this information available to them.
The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists says claims about abortion reversal treatment are not based in science. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The COVID-19 vaccine holds promise for ending the pandemic, but some people are reluctant to get the shots because they have questions about how the vaccines were created. Side Effects Public Media's Steph Whiteside asked 2 professors about the science behind the vaccines.
Millions of Americans have received a COVID vaccine, but 39% aren't likely to get it, according to a December study from the Pew Research Center. One of the main reasons was a lack of trust in the research and development process. Michael Olson is an assistant professor of immunology with the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. He says COVID vaccines work like others, and the first thing to understand is how the body develops an immune response.
And so anytime a foreign thing is recognized, your body goes through a process of presenting that foreign thing to various immune cells, and then those immune cells try to make an antibody response. That's all part of what is called adaptive immunity.
A vaccine trains the body to respond to a specific invader, in this case, the novel coronavirus.
What takes place is that your body needs to be trained to recognize something foreign. And so the vaccine provides that foreign material to train your body to have antibodies, essentially, to that thing.
Vaccine development isn't a new field. The first smallpox vaccine was created in 1798, but it still may take 10 years or more to create a vaccine for a new disease. The COVID vaccine went faster, in part because of the huge amount of money provided by governments and drug companies. Vaccine trials were held at hundreds of sites around the world, and with so many people exposed to the virus, Olson says scientists could quickly see the difference between subjects who were vaccinated and those who weren't.
And with the disease burden as high as it is in the United States, then the likelihood of people getting the infection in the placebo group was high. You didn't have to wait for years to find out if people were protected, right? You were able to find out over the course of 2 months that the numbers were drastically reduced in the vaccine group compared to the placebo.
And while it may not seem like anyone had much luck in 2020, scientists got a break in perfecting a certain type of vaccine. It uses a process called messenger RNA, or mRNA, to trigger the body's immune response at the cellular level. Keith Gagnon, assistant professor of biochemistry at SIU, says mRNA works as a translator telling the body what to do. In the case of COVID, the vaccine focuses on one specific protein made by the virus.
It creates almost a wanted poster for the body. And it's like a little, it's like a snapshot of the virus. And that's enough for it to know who to look for and where to go.
The first two vaccines, made by Pfizer and Moderna, use mRNA. But there are some drawbacks. They have to be stored at very cold temperatures and have a shorter shelf life.
But the mRNA is pretty unstable. It gets turned over or degraded by the cell really quickly. So it just lasts long enough to make this protein.
Olson knows that understanding these new vaccines and sorting through false claims can be confusing. He says there's one thing he would want everyone to understand.
There is no possible way from this vaccine to get COVID or pass it on to anybody else. You are receiving a tiny subset of one protein within the virus. No virus that's there that can be transmitted through the taking of the COVID-19 vaccine.
For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Steph Whiteside.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch and Elaine Beadle, the Secretary and CEO of Indiana Destination Development Corporation.
The Indiana Destination Development Corporation, or IDDC for short, and the Lieutenant Governor's Office are telling us about the launch of a new quality of life initiative here in Indiana, which is called Hoosiers My Choice. Let's find out more about the program. We have with us not only Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, but we also have Elaine Beadle, who is the CEO of the IDDC. And ladies, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to be with you, Chris.
Nice to hear you. Nice that you're joining us on the program once again. Elaine, if you will take a few minutes, explain what the thinking was behind the creation of Hoosiers by Choice and how the campaign is looking for people from Northwest Indiana to talk about it.
Absolutely. We're so pleased to be here to share with your listening audience today. Hoosiers by Choice campaign is individuals who have moved to Indiana telling their story of why they came here and now why they love it. I know we've all run into people who have said, hey, I moved here from somewhere else. I really love this state. I'm going to stay here, et cetera, et cetera. So we wanted to capture those stories and share them, not only with our Hoosiers to help them understand what people really love about our state, but also with those outside of our state who maybe have never been here before, and just to give them an idea of the quality of place. And we certainly have to say thank you to our partners in this endeavor, the Indiana Association of Realtors, who have become underwriters for this Hoosiers by Choice initiative.
Mm-hmm. How long is the initiative going to run?
We're going to do this for the entire year, and we have plenty of time to get all those other stories out there. We've got about 60 stories ready to go and videos that we'll put out two or three each week for the rest of the year, but we want more people. And so if you, in Northwest Indiana, all of those individuals who are there and love living in Indiana, who have come from somewhere else, we welcome you to go to our website and upload your story, your 90-second video story that will help communicate to others what makes Indiana such a great place to live, work, and play. And that website is just HoosiersByChoice.com. www.ncovax.com, and there you're going to find all of the videos that we've released so far, as well as an easy way to upload your video to tell your story.
Now, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, you and Elaine Beale have been working together on this project, I'm sure, for some time. When she first approached you with the idea, what did you think of it?
Well, I thought it was wonderful. You know, we anecdotally knew that people were moving into Indiana, particularly from Illinois. But then when Elaine came to me with this idea, we actually kind of delved into that a little more. And we knew that in studies that had been done, that over half of the state-to-state moves involving Indiana were inbound. So that meant more people were moving into our state than out of our state.
Mm-hmm.
And so if more people were moving into our state, why was that? And Elaine came up with the brilliant idea of letting those people, those Hoosiers, tell their story about why they chose to come to Indiana. And I'll tell you, the stories are just heartfelt, they're warm, and it really makes those of us who are Hoosiers by birth, it really makes us feel inspired and gives us pride, because I always say we're humble Hoosiers. We work hard, we put our nose to the grindstone, we do what's right, we don't expect pats on the back, but as a result, we don't always celebrate our successes, and we don't always appreciate how great our state is, and this is an opportunity to showcase that. And again, when Elaine came up with this brainstorm of an idea, you know, I said, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. But that's what Elaine does. She's got a brilliant mind.
Elaine, if you will you share a couple of the stories that people can check out for themselves if they like on the Hoosiers by Choice campaign website? Tell us about these people, the family members, perhaps, that may be the case. What brought them to Indiana, and certainly what is making them want to stay here in the Hoosier State?
Well, there's a great story from a young lady in Wabash, Indiana, who moved here right out of college as a journalism major because she was looking around and found an opportunity to be with the local newspaper in Wabash.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got to Indiana, it was kind of like, okay, I'm going to give this a go. I'm going to see if I like it. And she found out she absolutely has fallen in love with Indiana. And I think part of it was how easy it was for her to get engaged with the community and to do things with the community. And so it's a great story that I hope everyone will go and watch that little video. But we have others from, example one from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Jane moved to Lafayette, Indiana. And the reason she moved, she said, you know, I was an observer in Chicago. I'm able to be a participant in Lafayette. And she said, I'm a doer. So I love being in Lafayette, and I love my newfound life here, and I'm not leaving either. So all of these Hoosiers by Choice videos are just, as the Lieutenant Governor said, very inspiring and very heartwarming.
Now tell us how the program is set up. You mentioned that the fact that you're looking for Hoosiers from all across the state to tell their stories and make sure they get onto the website. How is the state broken up so that if there are people here, say in Northwest Indiana, we're in the far northwest corner, how they will field participants in this program?
Well, we want someone from every county to participate. And we did divide the state up just north, central, and south. So if you go to the website and click on either of those three locations, you'll see the stories for people who are in those regions. But again, we are seeking those stories. And I know you know people, Chris, who have probably told you why they've moved to Indiana. And
oh, yeah.
You probably know several people who would have great stories to share.
Lieutenant Governor Crouch, I know that, of course, now because of the pandemic, you're not doing a lot of face-to-face talking with legislators at the State House. But if the opportunity presents itself, do you have an opportunity to talk with our lawmakers, maybe during the breaks in session, to get the idea from them and let them know more about this particular program to encourage their constituents to participate?
I think that is a wonderful idea, Chris. And we will reach out to each legislator individually and be sure that they have access to this and to the Hoosiers by Choice campaign and website, and we'll also encourage them to let their constituents share their stories also. I think that's a wonderful idea. We'll get right on that.
Now, Elaine, if you will tell us once again about the website, how people can participate, and how you'd like for them to tell their stories.
Absolutely. It's HoosiersByChoice.com. Pretty easy. HoosiersByChoice.com. You will see all of the videos that we've so far released on that website, and there's a link to upload upload your own. So it's a very simple process. We ask for very little information about you, you know, who you are, where you're from. And then all you need to do is take on your phone or your iPad a 90-second video telling your story, upload it, and we take it from there.
Elaine Beadle is the CEO of the Indiana Destination Development Corporation, and she is with Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch. They're both talking about the launch of a new quality of life initiative, which is called Hoosiers by Choice. It's a campaign that's underway through this year. It features people who have moved to Indiana and talks about why they chose the Hoosier State to be their permanent home. Ladies, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.